Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
National Bank, member FDIC.
Idle Musings from Dean Richards.
I haven't had chiclets in years. God,
those things were so good.
Do they still make those?
I don't know. They should.
Spend your Sunday morning with Dean Richards starting at 9 on WGN.
Of WKGCFM high atop the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida. Taking you on the road with us tonight.
Yes, we are. In beautiful 77 degrees in Panama City, Florida.
Yeah. It's a pretty night, but ladies and gentlemen, we start the show. Paul has...
Well, I have a few pals, so let's make it a Paul.
A Paul has fallen over the show.
Really?
And we invite you all to send some sympathy cards to our resident computer guru, Patrick Crispin, because tonight was not a good night for Alabama football.
No. Bob Fukuda, the keeper of the big plug, will you chime in with the little bit of news you dropped about 5 minutes ago?
The Vanderbilt Commodores, I believe it is, defeated the number one Alabama Crimson Tide, 40-35.
Ooh,
40-35.
Yes. Vanderbilt.
Oh, boy.
Wow. Wow. Well, I sent a text to Patrick Crispin, who is the biggest, by far the biggest Roll Tide fan in the world. And I said, Vandy, really?
Was he able to read the text through his tears?
Well... He answered with, yep, the Vandy band stormed the field in single file. I don't know if that's code or something,
but I don't know.
He's not. Oh, he said, did say they did throw the goalpost in the Cumberland River, though. Okay. I'm not going to push it because, he takes his football very, very seriously.
Well, we should make a couple pronouncements. As we said a couple minutes ago, we are broadcasting from the studios of WKGC-FM in Panama City, Florida. And we had thought that we might be down here for a couple weeks, but sadly, Johnny's back has made the decision that this is going to be our only week down here for a while. And on Wednesday, you're going to be seeing a doctor to hopefully make your back get back.
Yes, make me feel a little bit better. So if I start talking even crazier than I often do after midnight...
Yeah.
Can we blame it on the meds?
Because the meds are about to wear off in an hour or two.
Oh, well, 15 minutes to 12, the bewitching hour of 12, they wear off. And I just start screaming or just rambling. Just turn off my microphone, okay?
But speaking of bewitching, in the 11 o'clock hour, we're going to talk with a new friend, Caitlin Jones, who is the author of Haunted Florida Panhandle.
And you have to say it that way, too.
Yeah, you do. Every time when you go into to Barnes & Noble or wherever you're going to get the book, you have to say,
Haunted
Florida Panhandle.
Yes, we're going to talk with her, and it's car night tonight. I'm glad it's not computer night, because it would not be fun.
Yeah, Patrick would not be a happy camper.
No. So it is car night, so we'll have Tom Appel joining us tonight.
The publisher of Consumer Guide.
And there's a lot to talk about, including, as always, recalls. A recall or three or four.
And we want to thank our combined crews back at WGN, Bob Fukuda, Ron Brown, Gabe Salgado, and Julian Soldiano. And
well, you just made his name even more different than I usually do.
Who's Julian Soldiano?
I know.
Did I
like the way
I didn't say Saldiana.
Yes, you did.
Didn't I say Saldiano?
No.
Didn't I put the R in there?
It's Saldierno. Right, Julian?
Saldierna.
So neither of us have a...
Sorry.
And we've only worked with Julian for...
Over a year.
Over a year.
Yeah.
On the bright side, Steve, you nailed my name. Got it.
Thank you.
Right on
Ron
the money.
Ron Brown.
You just right on the money.
Right on. We missed you last week, Ron. I was a little concerned when I saw you with an adult beverage in your hand on Facebook, and I thought,
I wonder if he's
coming to work tonight.
Yeah. I had the night off, yes.
You did, yes.
And our crew here at WKGC, we have Tom Hoots and Caleb Jordan, and Tom, who is... You staying awake, Tom?
It's past his bedtime.
I'm trying. What time of day is this, or is this nighttime?
Look at his little pig eyes.
I need to take a picture of Tom.
Tom gets up before the sun comes up, so he's had a long day, right, Tom?
Yeah, I'm starting into tomorrow. I think it's tomorrow already today, or something like that.
Okay,
But after you've been up for about 20 hours, everything is just...
Oh, look,
strange.
Now he's forcing his eyes open, like, okay, I'm here.
Now you can go ahead and put them back
back where they normally are this time of day.
And Caleb is with us. I said to Caleb, did you have a good summer? And you had to think about it. You're like, oh, it's October. There was a summer, right?
Yeah, technically.
Well, when we last talked, we were here in July for a week. You had just returned from a month in Greece. Are you still kind of enjoying the afterglow of spending a whole month in a foreign country?
Yeah, I'm just reminiscing. I'm missing
really?
Every
yes.
moment.
Eating saganaki and drinking ouzo and, right? All the good Greek things that I know about.
Climbing mountains, uphill both ways.
Wading in grapes and smashing them with your feet, right? See, that's all I know about Greece. It's ignorant. I know. Forgive me. If we would go to Greece, maybe I'd learn more, Steve.
I think that was a hint.
I think it was. Sometimes I have to kick him, though, when I'm giving him a hint. And he's too far from me. So, and this is really different because the studio at home, you are really far from me.
Yeah.
I can't reach over and pinch you or nudge you.
But at the studio at home, I'm back at WGN Radio. I'm literally across the control board, but Frequently, I see Johnny looking past me at the building outside of our 18th floor window because there is a couple, who, and they will occasionally flash their flashlight
to get my attention,
to get us to look over to see what they want us to see.
It has been an education. Because sometimes Steve is looking at me like, hey, hey, I'm over here. And I'm like, uh-uh, I'm over here.
Yeah.
I'm watching over your shoulder because I ain't never seen that.
And we usually, we've seen the Navy Pier fireworks, but we're seeing the neighbor's fireworks.
I was afraid. I was like, where are you going with we've seen me? Well, now, Ron, you're in a different part of the building, so you don't get the bird's eye of the high-rise directly from our studio, right?
I'm looking more out.
No, Ron's on his way down to our studio now to see what goes on down there.
Yes, during commercial breaks.
Okay.
Speaking of commercial breaks, I think we should do that, and then maybe we'll have some shouts.
Yes, so hang in there on WGN.
King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio, and I could be wrong, but I think it's time for a few shouts. Julian, which version of shout is that? I like that.
Tears for Fears.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was Tears for Fears.
Now, you can reach us all night long at 312-981-7200. And first, before I get to some of the names and the 13 states that are represented tonight, I want to answer the most common question that's coming up in our text and also on Facebook at the Steve and Johnny Show. How is our house in Florida? We came through Hurricane Helene unscathed. The whole town is great. It is unbelievable when we look at what's happening on the East Coast. And yes, it brings back memories of Michael, which the anniversary is coming up next week. But we're all good.
Our part of the panhandle was on the far western edge. So the most we got was some water.
Yeah, some rain.
But nothing at all like what they're dealing with in the Carolinas.
A lot of folks, and in Tennessee and in Georgia, a lot of folks are reminding us or letting us know that there's another hurricane out there, old Milton.
Yep.
And Milt is targeting south of us. So, yes, it looks like it's at this point they're talking about Category 2, maybe a 3. And you just take a deep breath and go, really? We've got a lot of folks listening to us tonight from South Florida, and those are the ones that are saying, let's all pray that this just does not become what they say it might be. The other question is, how is my back? And so now you know we're going to cut our vacation short. We're not staying here for a month. We're just staying here for this week and then heading back on Tuesday.
And that decision literally was made today.
Yes.
Johnny was not having a good time at all, and we were lucky enough to make contact with a doctor, so you're able to see a doctor on Wednesday.
Yes, 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 yes. So thank you all for your kind thoughts, your well wishes, your prayers, all that good stuff. I can't thank you enough. And you've been incredibly active throughout the week on our Facebook page. Thank you for all of your good wishes, too, on my 47th anniversary as a professional broadcaster. That kind of blew me away, and I really appreciate the hundreds of people that chimed in about that. So now to our shout out for this week. As I say, we got so many states that are tuned in tonight. But first things first, our good buddy Bobby Danos from Sandwich is celebrating a birthday tomorrow. So let us be the very first to say happy birthday to Bobby Danos out in Sandwich, Illinois.
Happy birthday, Bobby Danos.
Yeah,
birthday,
don't Bobby. We have to pay for it. Stop it. Stop.
No, it's public domain now.
Well, the way you're singing it, they'll make us pay. Linda Moeller is in the Oklahoma Panhandle. Tracy Douglas is in Savannah. Marty Masters is listening 25 miles south of the Golden Gate Bridge. And I think that's the first time that Marty has checked in on the show from California.
I think you're right. Yeah.
Ellen Maria is in McHenry County. Terry Knight's in Batavia. Stacy is in Algonquin. Gordon Larson is in Flowery Branch, Georgia. I hope all is well with you, Gordon, in Georgia. Mary Gold's in Tinley Park. Bill Christensen's in Arkansas. Janet Gellert's in Lyle. Larry Mann is in Miami, and he's watching out for Milton in Miami. Nancy Hollins in Northbrook. Fred Husar is listening. Helen Thomas in Kenosha, Wisconsin. Jan Richardson's in Chicago. Susie Schimmel's in Glen Ellen. Judy B. and Judy Graham is in Plainfield. Lynn Kinzer is in San Antonio, Florida. Tom Appel, our buddy's tuned in because he's going to join us in a little bit tonight. Scott Cooper's in Naperville. Robin Aikens in Port Charlotte, Florida, tuned in tonight. Debbie Hardiman's in Waukesha. Linda Obremski is in Plano. Looks like I should say happy birthday to her, too. Elizabeth Hollins in Naperville.
Happy birthday to her.
Stop. Don is in Portage. Scott is in South Dakota. Bob and Sherry are in Arlington Heights. Susan Powell is tuned in from Memphis.
Memphis. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Peter Jacobowitz is in Pleasant Prairie, Wisconsin. Sandy McComas in Michigan City, Indiana. Beverly Ann Goodall, Highwood, Illinois. John Couture in Warren, Michigan. Diane Vasquez sent us some lovely graphics. She's our graphics guru. I'll have to post those later tonight. They're terrific. Rich Wade is in Troy, Missouri. Gene Jacobson's in Milwaukee. Brian Lefevre is in Chicago. Thank goodness we're getting out to Chicago.
We reached in Chicago. Donna
Youngheim's in Oak Lawn. Bonnie Pearson's in Grays Lake. Judy B. and Sharon Malone is in K-Town. Robin Maron is in Mount Horeb, Wisconsin. Linda Bremski's in Plano. Eric Baum is in Wells Beach, Maine, and he sent us a spectacular picture of the color change.
I love that.
Oh, I've got to post that. I've got to repost it. It is unbelievable. And please,
I'm surprised to see that kind of color change in Maine at this time of the year.
Eric Baum, is that a current picture or is that from last fall?
Yeah.
Because it is jaw-droppingly beautiful.
It reminded us of some of the color change we would see as we would travel down 65 from Chicago.
Yes.
And as we'd get into Tennessee and Alabama, the fall color change in late October is spectacular.
Beautiful. So, Eric, thank you for that picture, and I will repost it. Norb Rosansky is in Aurora. Joe Smith is in Nashville. Chuck's probably happy because Vanderbilt beat Alabama. Chuck Snitchler, our buddy in Hobart, Indiana, all decked out for the Halloween. Bonnie Nelson and Carrie Carlson are also listening tonight. I think I got everybody. Scott in South Dakota said we're coming in. The stream is coming in loud and clear. Bob and Sherry are in Arlington Heights. And if I missed you this week, I will catch you next week, I promise.
Yep.
We have
okay.
a whole bunch of states tuned in tonight. And we really appreciate that.
And as we said, we've got a bunch of things coming up tonight. A little later tonight, we're going to be talking cars with the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel. And in just a few minutes, we're going to be talking to a new friend, Caitlin Jones, who is the author of Haunted Florida Panhandle.
It's hard for many of us to get our voices down that low. It comes out, Haunted Florida Panhandle, which is not quite as scary as when you do it.
And speaking of haunted and scary stuff,
yes.
Each week now,
yes.
since we're into October, we're going to be doing the one little segment that has to do with scary stuff. In probably in about 2 weeks, we'll bring back our Halloween poem.
Yes.
And the Saturday night before Halloween, we will be replaying some of Chicago's Ghost Hunter, Richard Crowe's stories.
That will be on October 26th.
Mm-hmm.
Next week, we'll have a real short show because the Hawks are playing late next week. And you get to hear Charlie, who sounded wonderful. It was so great that we got to spend some time with him last week to get to know him as he's going to be doing the pre- and post-game show.
And we heard from John, whose last name I'm forgetting, who did the wonderful adaptation of our theme.
Oh, Herbach, yes.
And he says he's got a Halloween version that we're going to be unveiling in a little bit.
We got a lot of ground to cover tonight, so stay with us here on WGN.
A spell on you.
Steve, King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Man, I miss him.
I know. Screaming Jay Hawkins.
Yeah, we had more fun with Screaming Jay. In fact, we need to resurrect some of the, no pun intended, some of the interviews we did with Screaming Jay.
Yeah.
And for those of you who are new to hanging out with us, we had a long-time relationship with Screaming Jay Hawkins. In fact, we were pretty much responsible for Screaming Jay being brought over to headline the 13th annual Chicago Blues Fest.
The night of a full moon, no less.
And the we've told this story before, but again, for those of you who are new to the class, I will retell it. When the Screaming Jay came over to Chicago from Paris, he was hanging out with us, and he wanted to get some props. One of the songs that Screaming Jay does...
Or did.
Is
Constipation
called Constipation Blues. He needed a toilet that he could use on stage at Grant Park in Chicago. So there we are driving around. We took Screaming Jay Hawkins to Fantasy Headquarters in Chicago. We got out of the car, and when we got out of the car, because Screaming Jay was nice enough not to smoke in the car, he said, "Do you mind if we stand here and have a cigarette?" We said, "Okay." So we're outside the car having a cigarette, and across the street, Screaming Jay sees this rather voluptuous female, and he starts singing to her across the street.
And he was an opera singer.
Oh, so he had a wonderful voice.
It was very impressive.
But he loved going into Fantasy Headquarters and charging the city of Chicago for a toilet seat that he then used.
No, a whole toilet.
A whole that he used during his performance.
Right. He said they'll just throw it in the garbage afterwards, but you know what? This should go into the Rock and Roll Museum. Well, that kind of sets the tone for the segment of the show, because it's October, and we do all things that are spooky, and we remember people like Screaming Jay Hawkins and Richard Crowe, and ghost stories are our favorite thing, and we are tickled that we happen to be in the panhandle of Florida, and tonight we have with us a new author. Her name is Caitlin Jones, and her book is Haunted Florida Panhandle. Caitlin, welcome to WGN Radio.
Hey, Caitlin.
Hi.
Hi there. You've had a big day today talking about writing all day, right?
Yes, ma'am. I sure have.
So,
you want to say, where else were you today? You were hanging out with some of our friends this afternoon. Where at and what'd you do?
I was at the Bay County Library at Writers Fest today in Panama City, Florida. Mm-hmm. It was really fun.
And you found out how much talent there's down here that people that are writing like mad graphic novels and books like yours, true stories.
Now, we've known, because we've been coming down to the, well, I've been coming down to the Panhandle since the 70s, and this area has always had all kinds of legends, and you've taken and you've put them into a wonderful book, Haunted Florida Panhandle. How long did it take you to research this book, and what gave you the original idea to do it?
Well, it took me 5 months to write that book.
That's
all
impressive.
All the research and everything. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
I was so into my research every day. Yeah. I was just live, breathed, and slept. Like, that's everything.
As you were working on the book, now, you'd heard, as most people who live down here have heard, some of the legends. Was there any one legend that stood out as you were researching that surprised you with how really scary it was the more you took a close look at it?
So, honestly, when I dug into the research, I mainly found that just the history itself was kind of haunting.
Yes.
You know? So with that research, I actually had some stories from other locals in the area, specifically the Washington County chapter with the... some people refer it as Hard Labor Creek or the Washington Church.
Right.
That area, wow.
Okay, tell us a little bit about that.
Okay, so there is a over 100-year-old church there. Very interesting in itself. There is a cemetery or graveyard right there, and then there's also a bridge that's on the main road. They're all kind of connected. Interestingly enough, the Battle of Vernon took place right there next to, on the road to that church. Mm-hmm. And some of those people that had passed away are buried there. So
can you actually see the tombstones where you can see the dates go back to the 1800s?
There's actually a picture in my book featured with someone that had passed away that fought in the battle.
Wow.
Very interesting.
Wow. So does water actually run under the bridge? Because we've always heard that a body of water is kind of an indication that if there's going to be any haunting, it's going to be close to the body of water.
You know, I think there's a little bit of water, but not too much. It's maybe like a little bit of a stream.
But there was a bridge there because there was a body of water there at one point.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And, of course, the area, if we go back to the beginning, Native Americans lived here. So
right.
We also know that if you have Native American Indians that lived in an area and you add the water to it, which
right.
We've got all of that in our favor here for hauntings, right?
Oh, yeah.
Now, you were actually born in California, right?
Yes, ma'am.
And then
San
you,
Diego.
But you've lived your whole life here.
Yes,
so
ma'am.
You, they just had you in California and moved here. But you
yes,
have
ma'am.
You have ancestors that are from this area, too.
Mm-hmm. I do. Along my mother's side of the family, they were practically born and raised in the San Andrews area of Panama City. So it goes way back.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Well,
you also have an interest in the paranormal.
I do.
What was there an event or what got you interested in ghosts and spooky things and paranormal and all that?
You know, honestly, I came across a ghost show and I never really heard of anything like that growing up. And
a
I
ghost
saw it
show?
Mm-hmm.
Like a movie?
Like a paranormal show. And I was intrigued, and I said, well, let me find out more about this.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in 2016.
So you weren't scared. You were just kind of, it piqued your interest.
Yep.
Huh.
And I also had some friends that had also introduced me to that as well. And from there, it's been hitting the ground running.
Huh.
I love it.
Now, in reading your book, I know there are some areas, I want to say the Pensacola area, and you can correct me on this,
okay.
Where there are some locations where there are things like there's some structure with blood on the wall and you can't get the blood off. What am I thinking of? I believe it was around Pensacola.
That actually, I believe that's the Martin House, that chapter.
Okay.
So that is a house that is actually across the bayou that is no longer here anymore. It actually got demolished, but there was blood on the wall that no matter what they did, painting the wall, trying to remove it, no way possible would it go away.
Well, who was murdered there?
You know, I'm not too sure. I'd have to dig a little bit deeper into more research. But
probably people don't want to talk about it either.
Probably not.
Yeah. Because like, no, girl, go away. We don't want to, we don't
right.
need to bring up these ghosts.
But I believe that was the mother in her house of the people that owned the Martin House originally that they built. So
did they tear it down because of the haunting? Do you think that that's why it was demolished?
It's possible.
Because you could actually, you know, you could make a lot of money if you just
right.
put a gate there and said, come on in, see the blood on the wall. It won't wash off. People would come in droves, no doubt.
Right.
That's wild. So it took you 5 months to put the book together. Did you go, and I like the fact that you break it down in counties. So you can look at Bay County, which is where we are. You can go to Washington County. You can go to Walton County. And you tell us who is responsible for the counties being named after these famous people that we kind of take for granted. So in 5 months, then you just said, I'm going to. And you're from Panama City?
Yes, ma'am.
So you started here, and then you just branched out? And
honestly, I went to almost every location in the book,
mm-hmm.
and I just did a bunch of research, and I decided what I wanted to lay out there and just the outline of how I wanted to write the book. And I knew I had to get every county that I could envision, and that included Monticello to Pensacola, and I started there, and I started researching, and I started reaching out to historical societies, and that's all I thought about.
And it's published by Haunted America?
Arcadia Publishing,
of
through
course.
The History Press.
Oh, yeah.
It's a part of their Haunted America
They're
series.
Wonderful, because they really put out a good quality product,
yeah.
too.
They sure do.
And Caitlin's book is available on Amazon. I'm sure you've checked that to see that you're there, too.
Yes,
the book is Haunted Florida Panhandle. We're talking with the author, Caitlin Jones, and more coming up. Stay with us at WGN Radio.
I bought this house, now you know I'm bald. Ain't no Hank gonna run me off.
Ain't no Hank gonna run us off. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. We'll be here till the morning come. And we will, and we're talking about spooky things, the Haunted Florida Panhandle, the new book by Caitlin Jones, who is in the studio with us. And Caitlin, as you were working on the book, was there any place you went to that after you left, you thought, I don't want to go back there again. No, thank you.
Honestly, the Hard Labor Creek in Washington County, also at the Washington Church and the bridge that we were just discussing and the cemetery, that is, to me, one of the most haunted locations in the whole panhandle.
What kind of a feeling did it leave you with? Did
a you dread? Feel a feeling of a fear?
Definitely a fear.
Really?
It makes you definitely not want to go back.
Did your blood run cold?
Sure did, and it definitely freaks out a lot of people when they go there.
Huh.
Especially on a full moon.
Oh, did you do that on a full moon, too?
I have several times.
Timing is everything.
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Did you find that sometimes you would encounter people that go, we don't talk about that. We don't want to go there.
There's so many people that have read my book, and they go, oh, nope, that's a place to avoid, but we loved your book.
Really?
What was it? When you went to interview some people, were there some people who said, no, I'm just not going to talk about that? Yes, I had an experience, but no, I don't want to go back there. I want to get it out of my head.
As far as with interviews, every person that I talked to was very open with it, and they were very intrigued and wanted to go back with every location I was talking to them about.
Don't you feel sometimes, too, that when you are open and it's obvious that you're not a skeptic, that you want to, you know, soak up this information, that sometimes people are relieved that they're not laughed at, that they're not questioned, like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. This can't be real. You need to read your Bible. That sort of thing, as opposed to, wow, you mean you actually going to not laugh at me and listen to me?
Right. It's very interesting because, like, sometimes I fear that people would laugh, you know, writing this book, but actually I've had quite the opposite effect. People love it, and they're very interested in it, and I love that.
How many hauntings do you have you counted up how many you cover in the book?
You know, I actually have not counted, but I know there's so many.
Yeah.
And there's so much more that hasn't been discovered by many locals in the area.
I say the scariest road, and we have not traveled a whole lot around this area, but to me the scariest road is the road to Wewahitchka. The town of Wewahitchka. To me, there's just something about that town. God bless everybody that lives there. But just driving into that town, I feel my skin kind of crawl. You know?
If you, for people who haven't been here, and you can look at your maps, our friend Michael Lister, the author, lives in Wewahitchka.
Okay.
We went up there, and we were going for, it's the road that goes from Callaway to Wewahitchka. And if you want to imagine yourself in the middle of the darkest, scariest Stephen King novel, driving down this road,
your headlights are just flicking by all of
these. I mean, it is the scariest road.
It is.
Caleb, have you ever driven there?
Yeah, I definitely know what you're talking about. And my fiance goes back and forth all the time.
You're kidding. Don't tell her we said this, because you don't want to put this in her head.
She calls me because she's like, hey, I need to talk to you.
Yes.
Or otherwise, we're going to freak out.
And there's that body of water that you drive by with those dead trees that are sticking up out of the water.
Yep.
And that in itself, when you catch that during the daylight, I mean, it is just a cluster of dead trees. And there's a name for that area. But to me, that's like, oh, no, we had to keep moving. Just put your foot on the gas.
Yeah.
We've got to get through this. And once you get to Wewahitchka, it's a lovely little town. It's got a lot. There was a movie, Uli's Gold, was done in Wewahitchka.
Yeah.
Peter Fonda was the star. It was about the bees and the honey that you can only get from that part of the world. That made it all look so sweet. No pun intended. I'm like, no, I'm scared in this town. But the town you're talking about in Washington County, what's the name of that town?
That's Chipley, Florida.
That is Chipley.
Okay.
So in Bay County, where we are right now, primarily any hauntings would be over in the old part in Panama City versus Panama City Beach, right?
So there is a haunting. Well, there's actually several hauntings on the beach side. We have the St. Andrews State Park, which is also known as the Jetties.
Right.
Super haunted. Then we have...
Wait a minute. I'm going to make you pause there. Super haunted. Why? By who? By what? What's going on there?
So there was a tragic event that took place when they were building the jetties with the rocks there. There was a crane incident, and some believe that due to that accident, that has made it haunted.
So the workman that was killed by that crane is the sound that you hear?
You know, sometimes people hear faint screams underwater. Some people have
underwater.
Seen, oh yeah, and some people have seen them. The gentlemen that were working there, on top of the rocks, just waving or, "Hey, how you doing?
I'm up here." Yeah,
They just see them and they have a kind of a spirit form to them, or
full body apparition.
You know, you say this so matter of fact.
I'm, thinking, no, I'm sorry, you're looking at a ghost. No.
Some people think it's real people standing there, and it's their spirit, you know?
Wow. All right, we're going to come back with Caitlin Jones. Her book is Haunted Florida Panhandle. You're saying, well, I'm not in the Florida Panhandle, but we're talking good ghost stories. So stay with us here on WGN.
I ain't afraid of no ghosts. I ain't afraid of no ghosts.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
That's our guest, Caitlin Jones's mantra. I ain't afraid of no ghost. I ain't afraid of no ghost. Right, Caitlin?
You got that right.
So come on.
Caitlin Jones is the author of Haunted Florida Panhandle. And, oh, let me do that again. Haunted Florida Panhandle.
Okay, now you're freaking me out. I'll have to get a ride home. I won't want to be in the car with you at 2 o'clock in the morning.
But we were talking about the spirits that lurk beyond the Gulf's sandy shore, and on the back of her book, you will see a picture of just what we were talking about before we broke.
Caitlin was telling us about St. Andrews, which is on the Panama City Beach side of the Hathaway Bridge. And I guess I was asking the question because I was hoping you were going to say, there are no ghosts in Panama City Beach. They're all on the other side of the bridge. But this is a pretty dramatic one, and you've got an authentic picture of the crane accident at the St. Andrews, which is a park now. But when they were building the jetties, so I guess the Army Corps of Engineer comes through to do that, because you just can't throw down jetties any place, right?
Right. So I'm not entirely sure with all that went into that. I just know about the crane incident that had happened.
And it's a huge crane. The dock of my picture is dramatic. So
it's huge.
Did it crush him or?
It crushed someone and then it did kill someone, unfortunately.
So this is the ghost that people claim that they see. I'm fascinated by hearing underwater.
I know, right?
That's the first I've ever heard of that. That you could. I'm like, wait.
People have heard audible screams from underwater.
Underwater.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the things that I find fascinating about your book, because there are any of a number of people who will do books about hauntings here and there, but as you were doing the book, you actually took the time to talk to some of the historical societies and some of the pictures that you, tell us a little bit about that. So you research not just the legends, but the facts connected to the legends.
Absolutely. I took the time to reach out to historical societies in every county that's listed in the book. And from there, they branched me out to locals that maybe have had an experience, whether that be historical or paranormal, anything of the sort. And I really enjoyed hearing everything that they had to say about each county, and really it left a spot in my heart for them, because that's a way of history, you know, just connecting with people and just finding everything out about each county was just so incredible.
Did you meet anyone that actually lives in a haunted house today? Or they feel that their house is haunted?
I believe I did. I'm trying to think back. One lady... Actually, yeah, she was inviting me to go to her house. She said, anytime that I feel the need to just want to go somewhere spooky, she said, my house is really haunted. You should come check it out.
Really?
What kind of a ghost or spirit does she feel haunts her
house?
Is
she seeing apparitions or just cold spots?
So it wasn't exactly her. It's her, I believe her brother, and she can't see spirits, but he can. And he's told her, look, there is a bunch of people in this house, and they're our family, and some of them are not our family.
Huh.
So, oh, yeah.
Well, that's interesting that he can distinguish family.
Right. Right.
We're talking ghosts.
Oh, yeah.
Wow. Did you ever encounter a hitchhiking ghost? Because that's a big deal in the Chicago area. We have the world-renowned Resurrection Mary hitchhiking ghost.
Yep.
And as we started talking about Resurrection Mary, because our signal gets out all over the world thanks to the internet, we would hear from people in London going, well, we have a hitchhiking ghost. And I was beginning to think every town had a hitchhiking ghost.
Well, one of the scary things was one night we had our late friend Richard Crow. He was known as Chicago's ghost hunter, and we would have him on around Halloween, and we would talk about these kind of stories. And we were talking about Resurrection Mary. And the events with Resurrection Mary occurred in a suburb of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking with Richard, we got a call from the police department from that suburb. And that night, they just had a sighting of Resurrection Mary. So
oh,
when
wow.
you have the police department calling in and saying, right. yep, we just saw her.
She was trying to hitch a ride.
Wow.
And sometimes she would carry her shoes because she was leaving a dance in the 50s, and sometimes she'd be carrying her dress shoes with her, and she had a sweater over her shoulders, and so you're driving down this dark highway, and all of a sudden there's a girl wearing it as every trucker that we ever mm-hmm. talked to said she was wearing an outfit that looked like maybe a Halloween costume because it looked like it was from the 50s. You know, a skirt was a very full skirt and the sweater over her shoulders. And
in fact, I don't know if you remember a song. It was a legitimate hit record by Dickie Lee. I believe it was called Strange Things Happen.
Yeah.
And it was basically that story in kind of a generic form.
Mm-hmm.
So
yeah,
because that legend is...
Which always made me think that there were hitchhiking ghosts all over the country.
Yeah.
So do we have any in the panhandle?
Yes, we do.
We do?
Really?
Actually, going back to Washington County, right there by the church, that bridge that we were talking about, there's a lady that supposedly the legend goes is that she had taken her life, and she can be seen walking that road. And if you acknowledge her, she can be seen in the back seat of your car if you look in the rear view mirror.
Oh, no.
Oh, no, thank you.
You're basically inviting her in.
Yeah.
No, I've got blinders on. I didn't see no ghost. No.
But Caitlin's driving back and forth going, come on, girl. Come on. Get in my car. Right?
I don't know about that one.
Wow. I'm beginning to think I'm going to steer clear of Chipley in Washington County.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So out of all the places that you visited, that would be at the top of the most haunted?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Why don't they have banners saying, come to our town, we're haunted? Seriously, there would be people coming from all over the world if they thought that they could see a ghost, or, you know, their skin would crawl. And back in the days when you could take pictures with film, that was fun because we were always told you might catch an apparition on your film.
But sometimes Polaroids were notorious for catching
ghosts.
But
you don't get anything on your cell phone. Even though you can see the northern lights better through your cell phone camera, you can't see ghosts the way you used to be able to see them on film. Right? We're going to take a break. We're talking with Caitlin Jones. She is the author of Haunted Florida Panhandle. And the book is available on Amazon. I put a link of it, of the book, up on our page at The Steve and Johnny Show on Facebook. Stay with us here on WGN.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
From Steve King and Johnny Butler at WGN Radio, Bobby Boris Pickett, Monster Mash. We're talking scary things with Caitlin Jones. She is the author of The Haunted Florida Panhandle.
And a listener from a 608 area code text and says, any chance there are any pirate ghost stories in the panhandle? I don't think of pirates in the panhandle, but...
There is. There was quite a few, but unfortunately, I didn't put them in there.
That's their next book, The Pirates of the Panhandle. There you go. There's the title, The Pirates of the Panhandle.
That
would Don't tell
be
me they're
awesome.
They're in Chipley, too.
No. They are not.
I would imagine Pensacola.
I believe in between from here all the way to Pensacola, there is pirates.
Activity.
There.
Really? Mm-hmm. Anything around like the Tyndall Air Force Base? Because I'm thinking, I don't know, there's some reason I'm thinking that stretch of road going to the Air Force Base is also pretty desolate and scary, too.
You know, I don't really know as far as if there is, but I would love to look into that.
That's your... See? We're giving you material for book number two. Pirates of the Panhandle.
And if you're doing it for research for your book, that's a tax-deductible business expense.
That's
there
right.
There you go. Yes.
So,
hands down, you say the scariest was in Chipley,
yes,
in Washington County, the bridge that totally freaks me out. And I even read the chapter, but it still freaks me out when you're telling the story. Because I can tell you're like excited about the fact that there's this woman that pops up there on the bridge.
She's so scary.
She's so scary, yes.
Now, as you know, we're broadcasting our home bases in Chicago, and we have a lot of people in Chicago and around the country who vacation down mm-hmm. in the Panhandle. For someone who is coming to this part of Florida for the first time, and they want to look into some ghostly stuff, what area do you think they should go to first?
Oh, that is so good. Let's see. I know Pensacola, that is going to be a very good hot spot there. In general, everywhere in the Panhandle, I would say that. But Monticello as well, that is actually considered the most haunted, smallest town
really?
In the Panhandle.
And where do we find Monticello from here?
Monticello is just to, I believe, the east of Tallahassee, about like 30 miles, somewhere in there.
Okay.
And what's the scariest thing you've heard about in Monticello?
Oh, gosh, everything in that town. Everything.
Again, where is the church?
Candy and
oh my gosh,
gasoline and everything is scary.
Restaurants are scary. Scary restaurants. That's what I'm looking for.
Is a
ghosty restaurant.
You know, I'm sure there is a
See,
ghosty
this is
restaurant.
Book number three. the haunted restaurants.
Oh, that would be good.
Yeah. Because then you could go to restaurants and eat and
right.
wait for the ghosts.
But what is the scariest thing that you heard about in
Monticello?
Oh, wow. Honestly, just the history and all the buildings that are there. Like the Opera House is a really, really good one.
Is it a haunted Opera House?
It sure is.
Okay, you say that definitively. So haunted by a former actor or someone who had an accident there? Or what's the story
behind that? A former actor, as far as I know, and people that have worked there. So the history, there's a little bit of, it used to be, I believe, a store. And at one point, it was something else. I can't remember off the top of my head, and I know that's terrible. But it is just, in general, it's been through so many things.
Is the Opera House still open to the public?
It is. They actually do tours, and they take donations. It's free, but you can give donations, and that kind of helps keep it restored.
Well, that's a neat idea. Yeah.
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 It's
so
very cool.
Do they actually do shows or anything there?
They do. They do.
Well,
they
that's cool.
have events and everything.
So that's
as well.
In Monticello, Florida.
Yes, ma'am.
And so the town itself is just a really old town then?
It is. It really is.
And is there a downtown... I almost said, is it dead? Well, that would be a selling point, wouldn't
yes.
it? If it was dead. Is it an active town? Because I literally have never heard of Monticello, Florida in my life.
It is. It is in the Big Bend region.
Mm-hmm.
It's very small. Like, literally, you can walk down in the downtown area, and everything's kind of everywhere right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, everywhere you turn, there's an attraction for you to be at.
Interesting. So what are you going to do on Halloween?
Oh, gosh.
Are you going to go look for... Well, yeah, I guess that's kind of a lame time to go looking for ghosts and spookies.
But if you are going to be coming down to the Panhandle mm-hmm. for Halloween, this is a wonderful area for spooky gatherings. In fact,
yeah.
there was just... what was the organization we saw for downtown Panama City? They're putting together some special Halloween-themed events in Panama City.
And they also take you on tours of some of the restaurants yeah. in downtown that, in fact, are haunted.
Is it a graveyard tour or a some sort of a tour that they do for a couple weekends leading up to Halloween?
I block all that out. I'm like, no, I'm going to church that day, so I don't know. No, I love to talk about it, but I don't want to experience it. I don't want to go any place that, because I'm fearful that I'm the person that the ghost is going to come talk to, because she doesn't want me to know that, and they're going to tap me on my they're going to be tapping me on my shoulder. So I'm like, no, I don't. But I do love to talk about it, and your book is really a great read. It's really fun, and you don't have to be from this area. You can just get lost in the history, and I appreciate the history that you documented. You telling us, you know, some of the reasons why these communities came to be. And
thank
so
you.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
Nice to meet you. This is going to be your busy time of the year for the rest of your life.
Thank you so
much. The book is Haunted Florida Panhandle, and we've been talking with Caitlin Jones, and you can find a link to the Amazon site where you can buy Caitlin's book. You just go to our Facebook page, and you'll find a link right there.
So happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.
Thank you, Caitlin.
We've got a lot more coming up. Stay with us on WGN. Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. I'm digging that. Believe it or not, we're about to talk cars and all things automotive with the publisher of Consumer Guide, Tom Appel, and that is one of Tom's tunes. And Tom, what is the theme for tonight's adventures?
Tonight's theme is Imported Surf.
Imported surf. Now you make it sound spooky, Steve, when you say it like that.
Hey, it's October. I'm all about the spooky stuff.
No.
And who was that and what was that?
Yeah, that was the Atlantics from 1999. The song and the album is Flight of the Surf Guitar. And the imported part comes from Sydney, Australia, where these guys call it home.
The Atlantics.
I just like the idea of a surf guitar flying.
I just like the idea that 60s surf music is cool to these guys from Australia.
Yeah. We have so much to you about tonight. But I want to start with something that we have had so many emails about, and so many people want us to have you address the stories we've heard about electric vehicles catching fire as a result of some of the flooding from some of the storms.
Yeah.
And what can you tell us about this?
So officially, and were this as bad a problem as we're led to believe, we would have heard about thousands of electric vehicles catching fire. Here's the problem. Salt water and the interior of a battery, the battery chemistry in an electric vehicle, do not get along well. Mm-hmm. So in the event that you're driving an older electric vehicle that may have at some point hit something, bottomed out, and your battery, the battery cell may not be 100% sealed, you could run into trouble in a flood. Now, this could be an issue in Chicago, too, because we do drive through salt water most of the winter. Problem is, if we have a damaged battery pack, and the vehicle ends up underwater, you could end up in some serious trouble.
So state officials are now saying, and I'm talking about Florida at this point, Hurricane Helene caused at least 6 EV fires in Florida. And now those officials are pressuring EV makers to notify customers about the risk. Do you think that's a wise thing to do, or is that an overreaction in your opinion?
It's probably, if there's been 6 and there's a possibility of a couple more, one more isn't really an acceptable thing. So I think people should be notified. But it is an issue. You don't want to drive through standing water that's too deep with an EV, especially if you know it's salt water. Mm-hmm. It hasn't been that much of a problem, and I think that the media has gone a little crazy over-reporting this, but it is a thing that happens, and it is a thing to be careful about.
Well, I think part of the reason why we heard, at least in Florida, we've heard quite a bit about it, is because people had video of their garages going up in flames. And I think in one case, the garage, which was attached to the house, also made the house go up in flames.
That's terrible, yeah. There's another issue, too, and it's one that is being addressed, but there isn't a quick fix yet, and that's that an electric car fire is a problem. They don't tend to break into flames too often, but when they do, it takes an enormous amount of water to put that fire out. So you want to be especially careful not to put yourself into a position where your car could catch fire.
And it actually is water the best way to put it out, because we've seen stories of fire departments who spent hours and hours and hours because they were putting water rather than putting a kind of a foam or something, which is apparently more effective when you're talking about electric vehicle fires.
Yeah, water probably is not the best way to do it. It's just the resource that most fire departments have. Mm-hmm. And I think that, I don't know that automakers have identified the perfect fix, but there is one coming soon. And it's probably going to be something that is easily injected into the battery pack, mm-hmm. is what we're looking for. And it would not be water, to your point, Steve.
And let me add to EV vehicles, a listener just pointed out, golf carts also have lithium-ion batteries.
I didn't think of that.
And if you have your golf cart pulled into your garage because lousy weather is coming, you have to be aware that if that, as you said, Tom, if that battery pack is compromised and that salt water got in it, you could very well end up with a problem.
Yes. I think most golf carts are still lead-acid batteries. I don't know how many are lithium-ion, but they are lithium-ion. Or for some reason, lithium-iron phosphate, those are the batteries you want to worry about. If it's just old-school 12-volt batteries, like under the hood of an old Buick, not a problem.
Okay. All right. Well, again, the videos are just, they're terrifying. And a couple of the videos I was watching, I'm thinking, how can you calmly stand there unless you're just in so much shock that you're just holding your camera, taking picture of your life just going up in flames? That's all I could figure. Well, we have so much to talk about tonight. We're going to take a quick break and come back. Tom Appel is with us. Tom, when we come back, should we talk about any recalls that are going on? I think there's this little Tesla recall that we might want to mention, right?
There's that, but there's two bigger ones we probably want to address.
Okay. All right. Stay with us. Talking Cars, we do a couple times a month with Tom Appel right here on WGN.
Johnny Putman of WGN Radio. We're talking all things automotive with Tom Appel, the publisher of Consumer Guide. And tonight's Tom's theme is imported surf. And who was that and what was that, Tom?
That was a French-Canadian band called Les Jaguars, or Les Jaguars. Someone can help me with my French. But the song is Attack, also spelled French, A-T-T-A-Q-E. A-Q-U-E.
U-E.
With an exclamation point at the end.
Yes.
It's a serious attack, yes.
They're out of Quebec.
So would you say, Les Jaguars, an attack?
Oh, you make that sound too sexy. That's not. That's like surf.
Hey, it's French. So what do you want?
I'm thinking more Canadian. You know, let's get down to surfing. let's get down to the business of recalls. It seemed like that was a theme all year that we'd have to spend a few minutes talking about recalls, which, let me just say going into this, does not necessarily mean a bad thing. Right, Tom? Just because there's a recall on your car doesn't mean you have a bad car.
No, and the Tesla recall that's out right now is actually kind of an interesting technical issue, and it's about the Cybertruck, and the Cybertruck has been troublesome. I think that's a good way to put it. But this recall is specifically for the rearview camera, and the problem is that the rearview camera doesn't engage quickly enough, and the government would like it to engage within 2 seconds, and it's taking a little bit longer, so there's a software update for that to fix it. So not a big deal. And because this is an over-the-air update, it's not going to inconvenience anybody, not very much. And the issue itself is not that serious. So, no, recalls can be good things.
Darn, I thought the recall on the Cybertruck was, they're so ugly, we're just going to take them off the road.
Well, there's
they don't deserve to be on the road.
They're actually selling pretty well, better than I thought they would.
Yeah, yeah, they are. And in fact, we're starting to see them. And we were in California the first time we saw one.
Yeah.
And we drove up close enough to it so I could take a picture of it.
Yeah.
And we were with 8-year-old Joseph, who said, "That's a dump truck. That's not a car or a truck." And the more I thought about it, if I had one, I would get like a stuffed raccoon. And I would stick him on the top so he'd look like he was a raccoon in a dumpster. That would be my idea. Okay.
What, would you run a raccoon or a monkey?
A monkey? Okay. To more serious, you said there are a couple bigger recalls we need to talk about.
Yeah, there's a serious one, and that's for Jeep. Jeep is recalling a number of 2022 through 2024 Wrangler and Grand Cherokee models because of battery issues. These are the 4xe plug-in hybrid models, so they do have lithium-ion batteries, the same batteries we were just discussing. And for whatever reason, there's a fault in these batteries, and they could catch fire. So this is a serious recall.
Oh, boy.
It affects 154,000 4xe models. So that's the Wrangler 4xe and the Grand Cherokee 4xe. Mailing is going out October 17th, and you want to park your car outside of the house.
I'm sorry to hear this, because the Grand Cherokee 4xe, I love that
Beautiful.
Vehicle.
Yeah.
It's a shame. One of the things that Jeep has been doing too is it's been selling these things regionally, and there are the we call them sometimes the CARB states, but they're the states that fall in line with California's more stringent emission standards. And in those states, Jeep only sells 4xe models, so this is going to be a big ding regionally.
Wow! Yeah,
but this is a big deal. If it's not just that you're driving it or you're putting it through water, it's just sitting there and it can catch on fire.
Yeah, this is a fault in the battery, not triggered by anything external. So it's a big deal. You do want to get this looked at right away.
Oh, boy.
Okay, I go to my source for recalls every time you're on with us, Tom. And this is the first time I've ever seen the Elgin Sweeper is being recalled.
What is the Elgin Sweeper?
The Elgin Sweeper 2324 Broom Badger. Is this like a street sweeper?
Yeah, Elgin makes that stuff.
Yeah.
Yes, I think it is. And yeah, don't park that outside. I don't know. What is
it? What the heck are we talking
Well, it says the fuel system may allow the tank to be overfilled, which can cause a fuel leak, obviously. Dealers will repair the fuel tank free of charge. I just have visions of somebody pulling up to the dealer in an Elgin Sweeper. You know, well... Anyway, it's the first I've seen the Broom Badger on my list of recalls.
I never thought those things worked anyway. I'd watch them go down the street, and it seemed like they were just moving leaves and dirt.
That's true.
They just moved them around. It didn't seem like they were picking them up.
I just went to their website, and these are these big honking, with brushes, with moving, rotating brushes,
those big cool
sweepers.
Brushes. Yeah, I've always wanted to drive one of those.
Be afraid.
That would be cool.
Be very afraid.
No.
Johnny behind the wheel of
no,
an Elgin
stop
sweeper.
It. I would be sweeping up to the curb. That's what I would be doing. Because I stand out on our street and I'm trying to wave our guy over closer to the curb. I'm like, come on
no,
over.
No, I know what you'd be doing.
What?
You would be having people go to the houses of people who park their cars.
That's true.
Because half the time we can't get our street clean because the people don't realize the first Monday and the first Tuesday, either side of the street,
keep your cars
away.
Do they sweep your streets in your neck of the woods, Tom?
They do not, but they do come by for the leaves, which we appreciate.
Oh, yeah. That's huge. I mean, you can just pile them up there and they come by and pick them up?
Yep. Yeah, we just drag everything to the street. Now, you have to catch the day that they do it. If not, you're in a lot of trouble.
Yeah, but that's awesome.
We got to figure out how to get that done in our suburb, because in Munster, where my brother lives, that's what they do. You just put your leaves out on the street, and they come by, and they grab all the leaves.
And I think our worst leaf-picking day, we had 57 long bags of leaves at the end of our driveway.
And they didn't want it. We had to put them out for multiple weeks.
It was exhausting to just imagine 57. And leaves are not light either, she said. Maybe that's what's wrong.
That explains the back problem.
That's
exactly.
My back. Oh, my gosh. All right. Any other recalls we need to talk about, Tom?
Yeah, real quick, this one's a pain in the butt, but it is not dangerous. 91,000 Ford vehicles, and it's a lot of them, Bronco, Explorer, Edge, Lincoln Navigator, Nautilus, and the F-150. The 2.7-liter and 3.0-liter EcoBoost engines may have a faulty intake valve that can splinter and introduce metal shards into the engine. Ooh. So those are being recalled. It's a very specific number of very specific vehicles, 2021 through 2022, and notices go out like today.
Mm-hmm. Is it just
October
7th. Is it just me, or have there been a bunch of recalls that we've talked about recently involving shards of crud getting into your engine?
Yeah, and that Toyota one we've talked about is a big, big deal. A lot of money, a lot of inconvenience for people. And you wonder why, because it seemed like we got past that.
And recap the Toyota story. Wasn't a part of the problem is they have to...
With the Toyotas, you're not just getting a part replacement, they're replacing the whole engine. And it's taking, like, what, a full day or two to replace each individual engine?
Per my podcast partner, Jill Simonillo, who works over at Pickup Truck Plus SUV Talk, the full engine replacement is going to take 25 man hours.
Ooh.
That's,
yeah.
Now that's for each individual vehicle.
Yeah.
Yep. For 100,000 vehicles.
That's crazy.
That's a big deal. What have you been driving lately?
Oh, a couple of nice things. I'm glad you asked. I am currently, or I just got out of the, and did finally write about, the 2024 Honda Passport Trail Sport. And the Trail Sport is the sort of sporty off-road version of the vehicle. And I have not driven a Honda midsize crossover in a while, and I sort of forgot about how much fun they are to drive. They just feel light on their feet. The steering is brisk. The braking is snappy. So they're just fun to drive around town. But the Trail Sport introduces mostly an off-roady look, not that much off-roady capability. So really the big difference is wheels and tires. But a likable vehicle, the base vehicle in the Passport lineup is the EXL at about $43,000. You're only paying about $2,500 more to go to the Trail Sport. So if you like the look and you want to pick up an incremental amount of off-road capability that might be good in the snow, this is a nice way to go. I like the vehicle a lot.
Hmm. And what's the second row of seats like in that?
Very roomy. Yeah,
was it,
it's a full
was it a bench or how was it configured?
In the Trail Sport, it's a bench.
It is a bench. Okay. Because we had a listener that was curious about any other midsize SUVs out there that we never talk about. And I'm thinking, well, that's one we've not talked about before.
And by the way, we were because we were down here, we missed the Midwest Automotive Media Association fall road rally. What were some of the vehicles that were launched out there that you got to test?
One of the things, I didn't attend the rally, the event, unfortunately. I've got some problems with mobility because I need to have my knee replaced. But they had a fair number of electric vehicles that people haven't seen before, which is pretty nice. So it was a really good electric vehicle event. And it seemed like a brisk event. There was probably about 100 vehicles there. It looked like a good event.
Hmm.
Was that, from what you've heard, were the lion's share of vehicles electric?
I would say about a third of them were. I think manufacturers are pushing those forward to make sure people have access to them. So sort of outsized access to EVs this year.
Okay. By the way, the blatant plug light has just gone on. So if people want to check you out, they should do it at consumerguide.com. And what's going on at consumerguide.com right now?
I've got a review I'm working on right now, and that is of the 2025 Genesis GV80. Genesis just lightly freshened the GV80. It's their very successful midsize crossover. And the big differences are exterior trim and then the console. They've gone to a single-piece instrument panel and center console. It's a very clean and slick look, and I rather like it. I think it was a successful update. So if you like the old GV80, you're going to like the new GV80.
Well, I'm going to jump in here, and when you do that review, we want to talk about it, because we have a GV80. We love the vehicle we have. I haven't been crazy about the new dash configuration, and that's just a personal opinion.
It's kind of claustrophobic. It's kind of like there's too much going on in front of you.
Well, and I'm not crazy about you have this big screen that runs the mm-hmm. length of the vehicle. I like having dials and then just give me the navigation screen in a separate place. Let me see the dials in front of me. That's just personal taste.
We are slowly being groomed by automakers to get away from physical switchgear. And
yes.
It's a thing that happened, and people seem to be resisting it somewhat. And one of the things that may not be of I think, that people may not like is that the GV80, the previous generation GV80, had a very nice sort of like the center console. Everything in the center console was arranged in sort of a vertical stack that slid horizontally. And mm-hmm. it was really a nice, simple, elegant way to get to where you were going in the touchscreen system. It's not quite that simple anymore.
One of the things that I found interesting in some of the groups that we follow, somebody posted an incident with one of the new GV80s that scared the daylights out of them, and it has to do with this new screen. So now with the 2025 GV80, rather than having a separate cluster where you have your speedometer and your tachometer, and then on the center of the dash you have your screen that has your navigation and everything else, this screen goes all the way across the dash, and it has the speedometer, the tach, and everything else in this endless screen. Well, they're driving along, and the screen went out. Nothing. No speedometer, no tach, no nothing as they were driving, and it scared the daylights out of them. Now, from what I understand, the good news is the car was still operable. You just couldn't see what you were doing. You had no idea how fast you were going, what the tachometer was doing, if anything else was going on.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of the reasons, and again, I love GV80s. This is one of the reasons why I'm not crazy about putting all that information in one screen. I want a separate cluster that gives me the speedometer and the tachometer information, not tied to this screen that could suddenly go blank when I'm driving.
I need to look into, before the next time we talk, what the failure rate is on some of these larger screens. Cadillac started this trend with the last generation of Escalade, and it's an enormous screen. They call it OLED, or organic LED, mm-hmm. and the Cadillac screen goes pretty deep into the passenger side of the car and actually extends to the left of the steering wheel, and there is information presented in the same single screen. It's a very clean look to the left of the steering wheel. So that the driver has really three different information sources. And then Lincoln with the Nautilus, which just came out this year, has a pillar to a pillar screen, the whole dash top. It's an impressive thing to see. You can pick where you want your information to go. So it's kind of nice to have a clock at the far side, and you can see that way over there. So these are impressive. They convey an awful lot of information, but to your point, they could be problematic. So I will look into see if there's any sort of failure rate increase, because you're right. If anything goes wrong, everything will go wrong.
Yeah. And the one thing that I would offer and hope it is true of all vehicles that have this kind of screen is if the screen goes out, hopefully you're still able to control the driving functions of the car. Mm-hmm. You just are not able to see what they are.
And that should be the case. Those should be unrelated systems.
Well, speaking of elements of your vehicle going out, we've been in Florida for the past week, but I came across a story out of Geneva, Illinois. Tom, did you hear the story about the 18-year-old that was driving the Honda Pilot? And as he was driving along, he realized that he no longer had brakes and he couldn't shift into neutral. And he was driving a runaway SUV, speeding along the road. He could have gotten on the expressway, but he made the call that he would stay on a more like a country road. This kid was thinking so logically. He tried to call 911 and for some reason could not. So he called his mother. Can you imagine that call? When his mother picked up the phone and he said, "Mom, I'm in a runaway Honda Pilot. It won't stop."
He was unable to shift it to a lower gear and at least bring down the speed.
But he kept his head about him. And the crazy thing is, it was going faster and faster. He was finally clocked at 120 miles an hour.
I would love to know the rest of the story and why couldn't he either put it in a lower gear or neutral or something?
Well, here's what happened. His mom called state troopers and they then, he was aware that they were around. He could see right. their presence. And a last-ditch plan averted what would have been a disaster because up ahead, the road he was on was going to become a T road.
Oh, no.
And
no.
now he's going 120 miles an hour. He was told on his phone, he has phone and speakerphone, he was told there's going to be a cruiser up ahead. We want you to crash it.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
And he did. He was able to do that. I just blew me away when I heard this
story.
We're
sure this is a not fake news. This is a for real story.
The trooper said that it was actually the only thing we could think of that we could do to stop him because we knew what speed he was traveling at, and he was keeping his cool about him. He just graduated from high school this year. I'm just trying to imagine would I have been thinking clearly enough? So he made the decision to stay on a country on a more desolate road than on the expressway, which is where he was headed when he realized he had trouble.
And he couldn't even activate the emergency brake?
Nope, nothing would work. So he stayed on that two-lane road, and he was able to, and even tried to use voice command to call 911, and voice command wouldn't work. So a whole lot of things were going on in the in the vehicle. He was in the drive-thru at Hardee's, or his mother was at the drive-thru at a Hardee's when she got his call saying, "Mom, I'm in a runaway vehicle."
Well, what happened when he crashed the vehicle? The airbags went off, I assume, and
everything
he's okay,
went off. Or? Yeah, and of course he crashed into the cruiser, and that stopped it, and he was okay. And apparently, they've turned the vehicle over to a Honda a dealership, and they're going to do a top to bottom inspection of the vehicle because this just should never happen.
I want to hear the rest of the story on this one because Tom, correct me if I'm wrong, but. I don't know that I have ever heard of a situation where you absolutely could not put it into a lower gear or neutral or something to stop the high acceleration.
Yeah, no, there's a bunch of systems that failed here at the same time, so there may be more to the story because the emergency brakes are not connected to anything else. They're a mechanical system, so they shouldn't fail even if a bunch of other electronic stuff does, so that's weird. Also, a pilot getting up to 120 is something of a feat, too. It may happen, but that would be tough to do on purpose.
No, he did
But it sounds like that not only could he not stop it, but it sounds like it was accelerating.
And then it started decelerating, apparently, because the officers in their cruisers could monitor what he was going at. So at his highest rate, it was 120 miles an hour. He had decreased down to like 50 miles an hour when he crashed into the cruiser. Somehow the vehicle, because he's got his hands on the wheel, but that's it. Nothing else is going on. At least that's the way he tells the story. And every officer that was on the scene said he was just absolutely amazing that he kept his cool about him. He immediately called his mother to say, "I'm alive. I'm okay." You got to love this kid. That I know.
Wow.
I was down here when I was driving my dad's car and the brakes went out.
Yep.
Now, what I did was, in retrospect, I think, wow, I can't believe that I kept my cool about me. I put my flashers on, and with my foot off the gas, I was slowing down, but I knew when I put my foot on the brakes that it was just bouncing. Nothing was happening, and I just kept going slowly, and believe it or not, by the time I pulled off the highway into the mechanic's parking lot, I was able to pull my emergency brake. Now I go in to tell them what's going on. When I look outside,
I remember this,
in the parking lot, and there's a man, a mechanic, getting in the car, and I run out and I scream, no, there are no brakes, because I had visions of him backing up and then just driving right through the place. It was really, really scary, but you go to a different place, you know, you're just like, okay, I could die, but I'm not going to. I'm going to be calm. But kudos to this kid for doing what he did. That was amazing. We are talking cars with Tom Appel. We will be right back here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Pugman of WGN Radio.
I know that tune.
That will be your Tennessee Waltz. That's one of Tom's tunes for tonight. And Tom, that is who doing what?
That is the actual Shadows, as foretold last break. Hometown London.
So and that would be from like the late 50s?
67, off the 67. Album Jigsaw.
Okay.
And for anybody who doesn't know, the Shadows were Cliff Richard's group.
Mm-hmm.
And they were huge over in Great Britain.
So, taking you back to the 18-year-old driving the Honda Pilot.
Yep.
The story I had said Geneva, because it was a Dateline, Illinois. I thought Geneva, Illinois. A listener in a 319 era code sends me a story, and in fact, it's Geneva, Minnesota.
Huh.
But he was still in a position where he was going to go down a two-lane road, or he was going to get on the highway. And a listener from 630 area code said, most of us in the flatlands around Chicago don't know where our emergency brake is. And
yeah,
that may be true. I mean, you should take a moment to find out where that is and what you do with it.
You should always take a little time when nobody does this, but when you get a new car, you should always take as much time as you can to get familiar with where all that stuff is. I've told the story before. My dad used to, when he got a new car, and he got me in the habit of get a new car, take it out, get on an area where nobody is around you, and as you're driving, you know, slow down to maybe 15, 10 miles an hour or something, turn it off. See what happens when you have no power steering. See what it takes to control that car and to put the brakes on the car.
I don't know why it makes me sweat just thinking about doing that at 15 or 20 miles an hour.
It's a great idea, though, because the weight of the steering becomes pretty heavy. It's a surprising...
Yeah.
It's surprising how much effort is required. And after a couple of stabs of the brakes, those get heavy, too.
Yeah.
You have some reserve pressure, and then after that, you're doing it purely manually. The other thing to do, and I always recommend this, and I did this with my daughter, when the snow starts, if you can find a big parking lot, it's great to try to exceed the traction levels of your car on a safe, big, snowy parking lot, just to see how that's going to respond. It's a really educational experience, and I don't mind saying it's fun, too.
That's true. And when you feel that chatter under your foot when the traction control is kicking in, that can be very scary if you've never experienced that before, because it really does do a vibration. You're like, okay, my car's broken. And you probably don't take the proper maneuvers at that point.
No, and some people want to respond to that by backing off the brakes, and you don't want to do that.
Yeah.
You want to stay...
Let's make a point in November to do a segment on winter driving.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah, let's do that. Let me see here. Listener wants Tom. This is 708 area code. Says, I want to thank Tom for his recommendation to consider a Costco auto program. I think you mentioned that somebody in your family had good luck with them. Right, Tom?
My brother-in-law, Steve, always buys his cars through Costco. He's been very, very heavy. And he is a shrewd negotiator, so he's happy. It's a good program.
Well, this listener said, after we talked 2 weeks ago, he said, I signed up with Costco, and I ended up getting a Toyota in Merrillville, Indiana. No haggling. Huh. It was a smooth process to get the car, and sounds like he's happy. So your
glad
job
to hear
here
it.
Is done. Yes.
Also, Tom, you have an interesting article on minivans. You want to share that with us?
Yeah, one of the things that's happening, and this is an old article that I just updated a little bit, but there was an article recently in The Atlantic, and it made me go check out the numbers. Minivan sales are at almost all-time lows. And we might all remember that when the minivan kicked in 1984 with the Plymouth Voyager and the Dodge Caravan, they were all the rage. And minivan sales peaked in 2000, 1.3 million in that segment. So a very strong segment. And for comparison's sake, like the big pickup truck segment is about 2 million units. So for this to be, you know, in that same ballpark means it's a very, very popular class of vehicles. This year, for 2024, we may not hit 300,000 minivan sales. So the poor minivan is disappearing. Yeah, it's kind of sad to see this happen. But, you know, in my lifetime and in a lot of people's lifetime, the minivan came and it looks like it's going. And there's only four vehicles left in the segment. And it's kind of dominated these days by the Chrysler Pacifica and by the Toyota Sienna, which are both great vehicles. But the other vehicles in the class, the Kia Carnival and the Honda Odyssey, are all excellent vehicles. If you're shopping a minivan, you owe it to yourself to drive all of them. But the market is shrinking. We're not going to see a lot more updates of those vehicles. So this is kind of, yeah, they're in cruise control now, and I think we're going to watch this segment continue to shrink.
But counter to that, didn't you tell us recently that Stellantis is resurrecting the Caravan name?
They resurrected the Voyager name. Yeah, and this is interesting. What happened was they've raised the prices of the Pacificas, and they sell a minivan that is a Pacifica, in fact, but in a lower trim level with different interior and a less interesting exterior, called the Voyager, and that was fleet only. So that was for rental and business use and things like that. It wasn't available new, but for 2025, it will be available new as the new base Chrysler minivan.
I'm going to ask you to expound on something, a question that I see on the Consumer Guide site. And the question is, what is the Buick GL8?
Speaking of minivans, Steve, this is so fortuitous. Speaking of minivans, Buick doesn't sell a minivan in the U.S. And the last one they sold, no one remembers. It was called the Terraza. If anyone does remember, go ahead, send me an email. I'll laugh with you. but in China, minivans are really a big deal, and they're not family vehicles. They're luxury vehicles, and they have really interesting seating. Yeah, they have interesting seating arrangements, like for four passengers in back. So everyone essentially gets a captain's chair or first-class chair, and they can be equipped with really extensive, like entertainment center-style interiors. So a very expensive minivan, a very upscale minivan. It's sold by Buick. It's called the GL8, and I don't think they export it outside of China. It's built by General Motors for Buick in China.
And people may not know, but over in China, historically, Buick has been a luxury vehicle going back to the days when, wasn't it one of the Chinese emperors who used to regularly be taken around in a Buick?
That's the story I understand, and that is why they revere the Buick over there. And Buick is a different class of vehicle, as you mentioned, Steve. It's closer to Cadillac over there. Mm-hmm. Than it is here in the United States. So here it's sort of a semi-premium, or what we used to call a near luxury. That's what Buick is here, and they're nice cars. Also, we import from China the Buick Envision, which is a compact crossover, mm-hmm. and it is surprisingly nice. If you're in a Buick dealership and you're looking at all the interiors, you're going to be a little bit struck by how much nicer the Envision interior is than the other vehicles.
The exterior is gorgeous on the GL8.
I just brought up,
if you
go to Consumer Guide's website, you can link to a video that I just brought up of this Buick. Wow, what gorgeous. Why don't they drop that? Look, I know this doesn't translate well to radio, but wow, what a gorgeous car.
Also, if you look at the pictures in the article, the dude in the back seat's holding a scotch and water, which is a thing we can't do.
That's right. Well, real quick, speaking of foreign cars, a listener says, I was in Rome last week and came across the Citroen. What? I can't pronounce it.
Citroen.
Yes. Okay. He says, I saw them all over the place in Europe. Is there any chance they would ever come to the States?
No. Citroen is part of PSA, the company that merged with Fiat Chrysler to become Stellantis. And Citroen has a very specific kind of European market, and it's really specifically French. It doesn't sell well in other markets. So, no, we're not going to see any Citroens in the U.S. again. They used to sell them here. I think they stopped in the 60s.
It's a little tiny vehicle, too, right?
Yeah, they've been sporty and luxurious, and they used to be known for hydraulic suspensions. They used to ride very well, but that hydraulic suspension was very faulty. So if you saw one on the side of the road, it was usually completely squatted down to the ground because the suspension had failed.
Well, wasn't one of them used in one of the early James Bond movies,
yes.
I think?
Yes.
I think we saw them there, and there was some spy movie with John Wayne, and I can't remember where they're shooting around in a Citroen.
There's a phrase you don't often hear.
Really? Yes.
We are rapidly running out of time. Any blatant plugs? People should check out Consumer Guide and contact you and all that stuff.
Yeah. If you want to reach me at carstuff at consumerguide.com. I need to tattoo that to my hand. It's car stuff at Consumer Guide in my hand. Also, this week, our guest on the podcast is Robbie DeGraff of Auto Pacific, and he shares their market research list of the 10 most wanted features in a new car. Great, ooh, great podcast.
Ooh, we may have to pick up on that next time around, because it's more than just a big cup holder.
No, it's surprising stuff. Like, nothing on there is predictable.
I look forward to hearing it.
Yeah, surprising list.
Always fun, Tom. We will do it again in a couple weeks.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks a bunch. A culture bleeding, now redeeming. It's here for the taking. For the taking? Yeah. Are you scared of my sound because I found my voice? Are you scared because all you do is sing cover songs, boy? I'll bust in the ass, cap, be in my b- write your own songs or just quit. Our little city, looking pretty. My friends behind the counters and Steve all the King big and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
I love this. This may not be everybody's cup of tea, but it is my cup of tea. This is Jack and Jen, and this is a new song and a new video that they just launched within the past 24 hours. You've heard Jack and Jen from this studio when we've been down here before. They're incredibly talented local performers. You need to take a look at this video.
The video is wonderful.
So well produced.
Yeah. And listen carefully to the lyrics, because it's Big Panama City is basically a mini history of the area as seen through their eyes as creatives.
And they're rapping about it.
And they're rapping, yeah.
And it's a history of the area right up to the past week when they started demolition of the amphitheater,
the Marina Civic Center,
and it is current. It is wonderful,
and they
it
do.
Is so. And again, it's the title is Big Panama City, and it's by Jack and Jen. Watch it, listen to it. They are so good,
as in Jack Daniels and Gin and Tonic.
Yeah,
Sandy and Eli make up Jack and Jen. And if they're listening, yes, that was your song just played on the radio on WGN.
I'm glad you like that, Gabe. I get the feeling you were into that.
It certainly caught my attention.
Yeah. Well, Gabe joins us for a few minutes. He is our news dude after midnight, from midnight on. And he also puts on a new hat for us because he has a passion for sports and Bears in particular. He's the guy wearing his Bears jersey. And I suspect you're wearing a jersey tonight, Gabe, are you?
Actually, I'm not. I'm just wearing a t-shirt today.
Okay. Well, Gabe has agreed to do a little segment we're calling Sports Between the Sheets, where we talk for a few minutes about what's going to come up with the Bears. And the Bears, I think you called last week, didn't you, Gabe?
I did. And this week, on paper, it looks like it should be a much easier game for the Bears.
Uh-huh.
But they're going to be taking on a familiar face when Andy Dalton plays quarterback for Carolina. And remember, just a couple of years ago, back in 2021, he was the Bears quarterback. And he's gotten older. He's certainly not as athletic as he used to be, but he still has the big arm. He still has the accuracy. He still has the quick release. And he's actually given the Panthers offense some improvements since he took over for Bryce Young. That won't necessarily guarantee them a win, but it'll certainly keep them competitive. They have a lot of injuries. I was looking at their injury report. It's over 10 players on their injury report.
Really?
Not all of them are going to miss the game. There was a lot of questionables on there, so some of those players will be game-time decisions. But they come into this game banged up. That's another advantage the Bears have. The Bears, their injury list isn't as big as it was last time, although Zach Pickens and Terrell Smith are going to miss the game again this week, just as they did last week. They're still banged up, but for the most part, the Bears are healthy. Keenan Allen was not listed in the injury report this time, so that's a plus. And, you know, this would certainly be an opportunity for the Bears to fully show what their offense is capable of, and another opportunity for the defense to keep an opposing offense at bay. And I think that'll happen this week. Although, like I said, I do expect Dalton to throw a touchdown pass or two to kind of, you know, keep his team into it. But this is certainly a big opportunity for the Bears to show up and show out the way that everybody expected him to at the beginning of the season. So this will certainly be a big opportunity for them to do that, and they just need to make the most of it.
I'm loving the Bears' defense this season.
And, you know, that's what kept them, you know, competitive during those two losses to Houston and Indianapolis. The reason why they only lost those games by single digits was because the defense was putting pressure on opposing quarterbacks, because they were creating turnovers. They were literally doing everything in their arsenal to give the Bears' offense a chance to succeed. It's just that in those two games, the offense wasn't getting it done. Last week against the Rams, the Bears had found a new formula. They leaned on their running game more.
Mm-hmm.
You know, DeAndre Swift had over almost 200 total yards of offense the way that they used him. If they could use him that way again, that would certainly help. They also used a little more Roshan Johnson to run between the tackles. DeAndre Swift's not necessarily the best running back between the tackles, but he's still a starting running back. But, you know, you keep the running back rotation going. And, you know, certainly, again, you... You Swift the way you did last week makes it things easier on both the offensive line and Caleb Williams' offensive line. They still let the Rams' pass rush get a little too close to Caleb at times, but certainly not as bad as it was the previous two games prior to that. But, you know, you stick with that same formula against the Carolina team that's going to be shorthanded with all the injuries, and that's had struggles of their own. You know, again, this is, again, another chance for the Bears to go out and show what fans have been hoping to see all year round. So, again, the Bears looking to get over 500 for the first time this year. You know, they're 2-2.
Mm-hmm.
You know, last week was a good bounce back game after those two losses, those two road losses. And you know, the key stat for me, they're undefeated at home, and it's another home game.
That's
for the
true.
Bears.
Yeah, they're, and I'm glad you mentioned that too, because the Panthers are at the Bears. And when I think of Carolina, I just think of the hell that so many people in the Carolinas are dealing with right now. I guess we're lucky that the Panthers could make it to Soldier Field for the game tomorrow.
I'm not quite sure how much the Charlotte area was affected by Hurricane Helene, but it was mostly the western part of North Carolina that got the brunt of that, unfortunately. And obviously, our prayers are with them. You know, that part of North Carolina specifically is still digging out, and even in some cases, there's still floodwaters there that haven't receded yet.
Yeah.
So,
you know Vic Moreno, former newsman.
Yeah.
Right, yeah.
Who lives in Asheville, and he's been doing some reports on WGN.
Yeah, and that's the area that got hit the hardest in that part of the state.
Yeah.
And some people may not know is that Asheville is literally tucked underneath the Appalachian Mountains.
Yeah.
From what I've seen on a map. And, yeah, so obviously I would assume that the entire state is Panthers fans, and this will certainly, if they can get to watch the game, it'll certainly be an escape for them, win or lose. But like I said, I'm not too sure how much the Charlotte area was affected by the storm. It seemed like mostly the western part of the state that got hit the hardest.
Did you hear, before we let you go, did you hear, I believe Vic had come to town to load up his truck with supplies.
And then he was going to take as much as he could back to the area.
Today,
Okay.
He was going to be traveling back with literally a truckload of water and basic necessities that they needed.
And one of the things, and we've talked about this in the past, but one of the things that has really come into play in that area is old-fashioned AM radio.
Indeed.
Because your satellites are down, your phone access is down, and really
no internet.
The only local communication they're getting about what's going on is local radio.
Yeah.
And news and talk radio in particular.
Yep.
And ham radio. No, let's not overlook ham radio,
because right.
I've seen a number of people saying, wow, my dad was a ham operator and I used to laugh at him. I'm sorry, because I wish I had all of that equipment today.
For the lion's share of people, they at least have AM and local FM radio available to them down there.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, so are you going to give us a score on the Bears game tomorrow? Are you going to go out on a limb? You've done so well up until now.
I'm going to go say the Bears win 24-14.
Okay,
write that down.
24-14. I got the Bears 24-14, and you know, like I said, it could be even more, because they certainly have the opportunity in front of them to do even better.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, going with the pattern of how they've been playing in these close games, I'm sticking with that prediction.
Okay, Julian. Next week when we start Sports Between the Sheets, we're going to replay
24-14. Yes.
Okay.
And I'm going to say, let's not beat up Carolina too much because they've had a really, really bad week. So 24-14 is fine. But so, none of this craziness.
Speaking of bad weeks, and I know we got to get to some other things, but real quick, before we let you go, Gabe, what did you think about what happened tonight with Alabama?
And Vanderbilt.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, and you know, let's send our condolences to our dear friend Patrick Crispin.
Yes.
He's in need of some hugs and probably some alcohol as well.
Yeah. Yes.
it's funny because before you two came on the air tonight, I was looking at a video on Twitter. Apparently, after they took the goalpost out of the field at Vanderbilt Stadium, a group of fans carried that thing all the way from Vanderbilt Stadium into downtown Nashville.
Yep, and it ended up in the Cumberland River.
Yeah,
that's what they. Okay. It was their. Yeah,
I thought to myself, I'm like, they're going to try to drink beer off that thing somehow. But
do a flight of beer on the goalpost.
You know what though? Now that there's a 12-team playoff to settle college football's national champion, I would be surprised if even one team finishes the regular season unbeaten. I don't think that's going to happen this year.
Yeah.
I think you're going to have a lot of 1 and 2 lost teams that the committee is going to have to sort through as to who gets into the playoffs. So, and these last couple of weeks, especially because, you know, again, you know, not only did Alabama lose, but so did Tennessee. I'm sure Patrick's happy about that. And obviously we know he loved last week's result against Georgia because Georgia was unbeaten too. So, just that conference in itself, the Southeast Conference is a tough conference to navigate, and you know, it's good. It's going to really going to. I mean, these last couple of weeks, we've seen a lot of competitive football, and not just in the big conferences, but in the small conferences too, because they know that there's a chance that a couple of those smaller conference teams can get in. So
that's true.
You know, I expect this to continue for the rest of the season. And you know these teams are definitely going to go out there and do what they can to make an impression on the community. And so when December comes, that first weekend in December, they hope to get their name called as one of the 12 teams. Yeah. So certainly we have some more entertaining football ahead of us. And Patrick, I'm
just glad it wasn't his night on the radio.
Yeah.
That's all I can say. Yeah. That would not have been pretty. Well, Gabe, thanks a million. And for those of you who tuned in and maybe you missed the end of the Hawks game, it was the end of the preseason and the Hawks won. In fact, Charlie said he was beginning to think if they didn't win that he was going to be the curse. But thank goodness they won. They won big 6-2. And there were something like 14,000 people up in Milwaukee for that game. And everybody was really impressed because it was just a fun night, and the Hawks looked great. We will take a break and come right back in just a moment here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio. Coming to you tonight from the studios of WKGC-FM, high atop the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida. And that is another one of the terrific local talents. That is Lowell Hopper. He is a terrific guitar player. He is his home base is Panama City, Florida. We're going to try and get him on the show at some point. That's from his latest album, Impulse. What a nice... He has almost kind of a Nick Corleone sound.
Yes, very smooth, very warm.
Which is not a bad thing at all.
Yeah, love the sound.
And speaking of us being down here in Florida, again, a schedule adjustment. We had planned on being down here for about a month or so. This will be our only night down here for this stint, because Johnny's back has decided that we're not going to be staying down here as long as we had intended to. Johnny's back, sadly, started making back sounds within the past...
No, I was making a sound, thanks to my back. I thought it was getting better because... Yeah. We didn't do the show a couple weeks ago because I couldn't sit. It was that simple.
But Saturday was not a good day at all. And the good news is we're able to get a flight back on Tuesday, and Johnny has an appointment with a pain specialist doctor on Wednesday. And
And I'm going to throw money at him and say, fix it.
Yes.
Do something.
So if all goes well, we will be back down here in late January or early February. We should also mention that for the next several weeks, we will have late shows. Next week, our show post-Blackhawks should start roughly at 12:30.
Yes, and speaking of the Bears, as we were just a moment ago, the Bears game, I'm going to bring in Bob Fukuda, the keeper of the big plug and engineer, back at the studio. He stepped away. I believe the Bears game is 8:30 in the morning on Sunday because they're in London, and Bob is going to be in London. And I think it's going to work out where we're going to be able to hook up with him and get a little scene setter from London.
And there is a, I'm just looking at my time difference, a six-hour time difference. So right now it's 7:27 in London.
So we'll wake him up. Well, he'll probably, if the game starts at 8:30, we'll probably be getting him from the field. Because he's going to be working the game, and with the time difference, it's going to be an early start.
And because we only have roughly an hour and a half show next week, Patrick will not be on with us, and Tom will not be on with us.
Patrick will still be recovering from the Alabama loss.
And the week after that, now we will do some spooky Halloween-y things, but the week after that, who's joining us? In,
2 weeks after that, we will have Don Romano in studio with us to play wacky, spooky songs. Which I said, is there such a thing? He said, trust me, I have some nuggets that I will surprise you with. And then as we get into November, we don't have any late starts, and we're going to be having just a ton of live music in November.
Yeah.
Because the Empty Pockets are going to come back, and they're going to launch their holiday tour.
And we're going to have Sue Foley, who's going to be appearing in Evanston at Space. She's going to join us.
She's going to be there the 3rd of November. Steve Dawson will come back and join us because he's got a number of shows coming up around the holidays. And he met Muriel Anderson, and I'm proud to say
we were able to introduce the two of them.
We introduced them, and he is going to be on her homecoming show in Downers Grove the Saturday night after Thanksgiving. She's been doing that for over 25 years. It's her homecoming. She literally comes home for Thanksgiving and then gives this wonderful show. And she contacted us a couple of weeks ago and said, anybody you would recommend? And immediately we thought of Steve Dawson. And Steve did her Monday afternoon, her Monday evening live performance this past Monday. And they got to play together. And it was really, really cool. So coming up, because it's a shortened show, suddenly the show is slipping away from us. We got some more stuff to sneak in.
And we're going to be pitching for our last caller.
Yes, yes, yes. That's just in a bit here on WGN.
Steve King and Johnny Putman at WGN Radio.
Brownie points for Julian.
That's one of his dealer's choice songs.
Yes.
And I remember exactly, we were in this city when I first heard that. It was brand new on a local radio station. And John, I was sitting in the car. Johnny was inside. You were getting a massage or something, and I was waiting for you. And you came out, and I said, I just heard this great song. I wrote down the name of it. We went to, there was, in the mall, there was a record store.
Yep.
We picked up a copy of it, and we took it back, and WGN Radio was possibly the first radio station in Chicago to play Mbop.
Yes.
I love that.
And they're old men with a bunch of babies.
And they're still sounding great. They do some great stuff.
I think, of the three of them, I think I've seen pictures of like 12 kids, all blonde, blue-eyed, adorable. Of course, you know, handsome was adorable too. But they're grown men, and it's hard to wrap your mind around it.
One of my favorite Christmas albums is the Handsome Christmas album. It rocks. It's wonderful.
I know. And literally, we were told by a record promoter that our show in GN was the first station in Chicago to play Mbop. which again, it gets back to how music was regional before. Yeah. You know, we had internet radio, so when we were hearing it down here, it hadn't made its way to the Midwest yet. Wow. And, well, you made me feel better, Julian. Thank you. My meds had worn off, and all of a sudden, I was like, I was rocking to little Oom-bop.
A little shot of adrenaline for you.
That's right.
Johnny
yes.
can't wait to get to the car, and she's going to pop another med.
Thank you, Steve.
Well.
You know what time it is? It's time that we start thinking about snacks and the fact that we never bring any with us.
Yeah, we know.
Which leads me to.
We did post, if you go to our Facebook page, that would be facebook.com/Steve and Johnny Show, and you scroll down, the first thing you'll see is a Haunted Florida Panhandle book. Then you'll see a shot of our studio here and a shot of Johnny getting ready and some shots of us driving into the station. And then you will see the delicious pre-show Brinner that we had.
That's right. Brinner is breakfast and dinner combined.
Yeah.
And there are few things as good as breakfast for dinner. And it was about 4 o'clock this afternoon.
And it was French toast and bacon.
French toast and some crispy bacon and cold milk. And boy, it was yum, yum, yummy. But that was a lot of hours ago. So we like to start thinking about what will the snack be when we get home. Mm-hmm. I'm thinking we may have fried chicken. I don't know.
Okay, whatever. What are you going to snack on when you get home, Caleb?
Whatever's in the fridge.
Yeah.
Just at this rate, you know, grilled cheese.
That's good.
Oh, grilled cheese works.
Yeah. I actually said as we were coming in, I said, maybe I'll make us a chef's salad because I have boiled eggs and I have...
But that sounds like a lot of work.
Yeah.
Sounds wonderful, but
it'll
like
be
a lot
worth
of work.
It. Yeah. Okay. Because if you
will
have...
your back think it's worth it?
Yeah, because the meds will
as
kick in.
As you're standing there cutting...
No, meds will kick in by the time I get home. So. All right. I've got a list of three candies, Halloween candies. You tell me what they have in common.
All right.
Circus peanuts. Candy corn and Good and Plenty. What do they have in common?
Well, Caleb? Except for Good and Plenty, they're my favorites.
His favorite. Two of the three are his favorite. Mm-hmm. What's your guess, Caleb?
Oh, I've got no idea.
Really?
Yeah.
They are, based on a poll of 5,400 people, which is a pretty impressive number, right? The worst candies in America.
No, I could see that.
The worst. And yet Steve said his favorite.
How can you say that
circus
about...
Circus peanuts. Yeah, especially circus, stale, I love stale circus peanuts he really
well,
likes.
Well, no, I like the fresh ones. But circus peanuts and candy corn, I'm there.
But when circus peanuts are still around at Christmas...
Especially if you put candy corn on your teeth.
Like vampire teeth.
It adds to that Halloween vampire effect.
Mm-hmm. All right, here's your list of the most hated. You ready? Right. Circus peanuts. Peanut butter kisses. Those little cheap blobs of peanut butter that are wrapped in the orange and black wax paper. You know, the really cheap ones. They're like the worst.
I am the peanut butter poobah, but they're not...
Oh, they're good cheap
candy. I'm not crazy
candy.
For them.
They're good cheap candy.
No.
So candy corn, my absolute, hands down, my favorite candy of all time is on this list. It's Necco wafers. Who hates the Necco wafer?
What is a Necco wafer?
It's a roll of wafers, and the pink one tastes like Pepto-Bismol, and the brown one tastes like root beer, and the black one tastes like licorice, and man, they're good.
So it's like
The Illinois Tollway Association hated those too.
because people would put them in the toll basket?
Yeah.
You're right. Yes.
No, I never heard that.
Yes, I have heard that.
That's such a waste of a good
candy. Did they work?
No.
Yes.
No.
For years they did.
Oh, stop. Now, Caleb, you mentioned Smarties. They're also on the list of the most hated. Again, one of the best candies of all time. See, I have the taste buds of an 8-year-old. Because I really, really love the Smarties and the Sour Patch. My absolute favorite candy now are Nerd Clusters. Have you seen the Nerd Clusters?
Yes.
They're addictive. Oh, my gosh. So, Necco wafers.
Did you like lick 'em sticks, too?
Absolutely, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Love those. I even love those wax bottles. Do you remember the wax bottles?
Oh, they were kind of fun.
And then you could chew the wax afterwards.
Yeah.
get every last scintilla of juice out of them.
Mm, oh, I've lost my appetite.
Oh, stop. Wax bottles are on the list of hated candy. All my favorites are here. Smarties. Bit O' Honey's on the list. And Good and Plenty is on the list of most hated.
Well, dentists love those because, you know, they just pulled the fillings right out of your head.
Absolutely. Yep. Dentists are going, and you know what? Go ahead and put them in the freezer because that'll make it even more costly.
Oh, even harder. Oh, yeah.
Right. All right, real quick before we have to break for the last call. M&M's are number one, most favorite, beating out Reese's Cup, which for the last 10 years I'm told was number one, which I found amazing. Yeah. Sour Patch Kids are number three. Skittles are number four, the most favorite of all time. Starburst are number five. Starburst.
Yeah, you need more medication.
Hot tamales, another favorite of mine. But I only like the outside, so I never share my hot tamales because I like to just suck off the outside and spit the jelly part away. And it's really difficult when you say to people, no, don't eat any of my hot tamales. Because they're kind of sticky in there.
Oops.
I know. Real quick, let me tell you. Hershey's Kisses, Hershey's Mini Bars, and Butterfingers are rounding out the top 10.
I'm hearing it. Yep.
But the place isn't messed up. Why would we have the Zamboni driving around?
Because
we weren't there to mess it up.
Dean is very particular.
Yes, he is. Keeper of the big plug. Big plug Bob.
And his Zamboni.
Cleaning up the joint.
He's signaling that that means we need to ask you to call if you want to be our last caller, 312-981-7200. That number again is
312-981-7200.
And you don't have to have anything pithy to say.
That's with a T.
Pithy to say.
A T-H, not an S-S.
But you can win some goodies in the prize list as long as you haven't won anything in the past 60 days or two months, whichever comes first. So if you'd like to be our last caller, 312-981-7200.
So the bottom line is, if you could sit up and hold a phone, you could win prizes.
And kind of make a fist.
Yeah. And you can talk about your favorite Halloween candy or what you're having for a snack, whatever you want to talk about. You will officially be the icing on the cake. You'll be the cherry on top of our last shortened show. I feel like we just sat down.
We did.
Yeah. Oh, we did?
Yeah.
Okay. We're going to take a break. We'll come back with our last call here on WGN.
It's that time again. We gotta say goodnight. You know it's getting late. Tomorrow is another day, my friend.
All right, people. It's time to go home. Yep. Losing time. We're ready to head on out. So let's go. You don't have to go home.
Yeah, you really kind of do.
But you can't stay here.
Can't stay here. And again, if you're new to our classroom, that is Red Peters. It's called The Closing Song. And no, we're never going to play the rest of it on the radio.
Well, no, you shouldn't say that. When it's our last show,
that's true.
That's how you'll know it's our last show. It will be our closing song.
In fact, on our last show, we will play all of the closing song, and we will play the unedited version of Big Panama City by Jack and Chin. So all of that. And we'll play Robbie Foulkes.
Oh, no, we won't. No. I don't want to go to jail, so there. Yes, he had a little tune that he wrote about Nashville.
Yeah, it was
his
something
love.
Along F This Town.
Yes.
Okay.
Jinx Sphinx.
Yummy Coke. We should remind you that next week, real short show next week, starting at about 12:30. And again, we thought we were going to be down here. No, we're not. This is our only show in this tour. From Panama City, Florida. And we'll hopefully return to this location late January or February for about a month or so.
To wrap up, too, before we get to our last caller, People are still asking how our house fared with Hurricane Helene. The whole town got very lucky, incredibly lucky. For a while there, it looked like it was coming our way, and then it bobbed, and it went east of us, and so very lucky. No damage whatsoever, nothing. So, again, luck is what I'm talking about, and a number of people have said, well, you've got another one coming your way. Well, no, it's actually south of us.
Hopefully it's going to be heading in a different direction.
Yeah, that's Milton. Hopefully it just dies out. It just poops out and doesn't make land at all.
And again, for people who've been jumping in and asking, how is your back? And your back is not wonderful, which is why we're heading back to Chicago and you're seeing a doctor on Wednesday.
Yes, this is true. And by the way, one more thing I want to sneak in. The lovers of the Necco wafer, thank you for checking in. Thank you, thank you, thank you. See, I'm not alone.
Okay.
They actually have phones, and they can make texts and write them to me. Real quick, we have a whole bunch of people, and we've chosen, I'm going to say number three.
And number three is Greg. And hi, Greg, where are you calling from?
From Darien, Illinois. A little bit west of Chicago.
Sure.
And why are you up at this hour of the morning?
I was driving my son and his fiance home from a party in the city. So.
Well, nice guy. Yeah.
Yeah.
So they could just relax and have a good time.
The Miami, California game. So.
Oh, I see. Okay. So who were you rooting for?
Neither one.
Okay.
Close game. I was rooting for when they got their butts kicked. So.
I see. All right. Are you going to be watching the Bears game tomorrow?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And
what do you think? Are you agreeing with Gabe? The Bears are going to do it?
The Bears, yeah, they're going to win by, I'm going 2 touchdowns.
Okay. That sounds good. So is that all you got on your agenda for Sunday?
That's general Sunday stuff, but Bears game's the big priority, of course.
Yeah, yeah. Now, are you going to have a snack after we hang up the phone? You're going to have a little nosh before you call it a night?
I was just going to talk. I had they had the breast cancer walk downtown today, and Lemonheads was the big sponsor. And, those were pretty good.
I love them.
For a long time.
Yes, the Ferrara candy people who give us that and the hot tamales. I'm like, why they have not chosen me as their poster girl? I don't know. For years I've said they're the best candies in the world, and forever we got them right in Chicago, aren't they? Isn't Ferrara still local?
They're still local. They just moved outside the city a little bit west.
Yeah.
So Ferrara is
years in the city.
That's not one of the companies that was bought out by Mars or somebody.
No, but I think it's changed from Ferrara to Ferrero right now.
Yes, you're right. In fact, you've just given me an idea.
I think it was like three families that used to own it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Three Italian families. And then.
I think we need to get someone on from that company, because if we're lucky, then they'll send us a lifetime supply. That would make me very happy. We'll give them a good...
No conflict of interest
Are you kidding me?
Nothing at all. Nope.
They used to have one of the Bears players as a sponsor. If you remember in the day when it was Lemuel Stimson, they called him Lemonhead.
Yes. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, boy.
Well, anyway, in my next lifetime, I will be their spokesperson. Well, congratulations. You were our last caller tonight, so we are going to send you some goodies. You get your very own official, legit WGN logo T-shirt. And you're also going to get the highly collectible American Weathermakers weather station. And I'm not kidding you when I say they're highly collectible. Yeah. It is... takes us back to the days when Wally Phillips used to give out the Seymour Payson scarf. And
the Ladybug pendant watch.
And then people were saying, I've got to have one of those things. And that was before the internet. And so now the weather station has become the hot thing to get your hands on.
So hold on for a couple seconds, Greg, and Julian will get all kinds of information from you off the air.
And go Bears.
Yeah, go Bears. And we will do this again next week, although at a much later time, 12:30.
Yes.
And again, our thanks to to our guest tonight, and some people are asking about how they can get Caitlin's book. That was Caitlin Jones. Her book is Haunted Florida Panhandle, and go to facebook.com/StephenJohnnyShow, and you will find a link to a site where you can get a copy of Caitlin's book. Also, our thanks to Tom Appel, who will be joining us in a couple weeks again.
And I want to just quickly mention something that's coming up on Wednesday. If you've listened to this show for any period of time, you know for the last year and a half, we've been very, very supportive of a little cafe up in Skokie called Will's Place.
Yes.
Will's Place is so, so special because Will's Place actually employs 23 challenged adults.
Mm-hmm.
And Will is one of those adults. And Will is the brother of Josh Solomon, who is lead singer of the Empty Pockets. And that's how we met Will, and that's how we got to know about Will's Place. And coming up on Wednesday, I just find this amazing, they are going to have a meet and greet of comedian Louis Black.
I love that.
Louis Black, there's got to be a story behind why Louis Black is going to be up in Skokie, 7927 Lincoln Avenue, at 12:30 in the afternoon. But he's going to be stopping by Will's Place to do a meet and greet. And you can go stop by, have lunch, get to know Will's Place. It's a tiny little place. I'm going to bet they're going to have an overflow crowd out on Lincoln Avenue for Louis Black, because he's incredibly popular. He's so funny. He's so good. And there has to be a story behind Louis Black ending up at Will's Place on Wednesday afternoon at 12:30.
And again, it's right up there in Skokie. It's literally right across the street from the Skokie Theater and right next to my favorite comic store, Oh Yeah Comics.
Right, right. And I've always loved Louis Black. I think he's legitimately a funny, funny man. I love his delivery. I love him even more now that he's supporting Will's Place, because I'm sure there will be a lot of people that will come out to see him, and they will see what these young people are doing in Will's Place. For example, Will, that the place is named after, works the cash register, and Will does not speak.
Right.
Yet, he can use a computer, and he can talk to his customers, and it's just an amazing thing to see.
And the mere fact that he can't speak doesn't mean he doesn't understand.
Oh,
he understands everything.
Yes.
And I've told the story before, but when we had Will in the studio, one of the most emotional moments we had was when after the show he came over and he just gave me a hug.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
That was, what a cool kid.
And that was before Will's Place had opened. And now they're serving some terrific food, some great coffee. They've had such unbelievable support from the village of Skokie. So kudos to Skokie, too, for helping make this happen at Will's Place. So Louis Black is Wednesday at 12:30. That's this coming Wednesday.
And our thanks to everybody who helped make tonight possible, to Bob and Ron and Gabe and Julian Saldurna.
Better.
Better. See, not perfect, but better. And Caleb Jordan here in the studio with us, and Tom Hoots, and all the folks that allow us to come in here and turn on the lights at Gulf Coast State College. Where are we exactly, Steve?
We would be broadcasting from high atop the studios of WKGC-FM in the Charles Hilton Center for Advanced Technology and Hospitality Management at Gulf Coast State College in Panama City, Florida.
And now time is up.
Okay. That works. On that note, I think our job here is done. Thanks for listening. Talk to you next week.